Seattle's Morning News. And this being Independence Day, I thought we would talk with former State Attorney General Rob McKenna about something that we're all very familiar with, that being the Declaration of Independence. Our conversation is brought to you by Arista Point Employee Benefit Consultants. And Rob, I've often wondered about the legal basis of the Declaration of Independence. We all understand that there always comes a time, sometimes in the course of human events, when one people who are living over here need to, what should I say, dissolve the political bands which connected them with a group of people living over there, but you have to come up with a legal justification for it. So where does that come from?
Well, in the case of the Declaration of Independence, it comes from an appeal to what is called natural law. So this is a concept from the Enlightenment era that premises that we have laws that are above the laws of man, that are so fundamental that they are natural laws and don't require governments, that they therefore are a kind of higher law to which we can appeal. And that's essentially what Thomas Jefferson was arguing in the Declaration of Independence. I mean, keep in mind that he and the other founders knew very well that if they came out on the losing end, they'd end up on the bad end of a rope.
Right.
And so when I read the Declaration of Independence, I always read it like a legal brief, where he's laying out the case against the King of England. And because, you know, he isn't going to win that case under laws promulgated by the Parliament of England, he's appeals to a different set of laws called the natural laws. And so, you know, when you read phrases like, "we hold these truths to be self-evident," you're really reading an appeal to that higher type of law.
So given that this was a concept that was promulgated at the nation's founding by people who we revere as founding fathers, isn't it logical for some people to ask, well, heck, why are they so special? Why can't I invoke the same natural law, even though we already have an established nation?
We see echoes of it now in the sovereign citizen movement, people who claim that statutes are only a contract and they can opt out of the contract, that U.S. citizenship is voluntary and they can opt out of it and just fall back on being what they call state citizens. These are people who think that the most powerful elected official in the land is the sheriff. Mm-hmm. And they don't recognize the power of the president or of Congress or what have you. There are probably about 100,000 people who claim to be sovereign citizens who are doing just that, a movement that really comes out of federal tax protests. I mean, right. If you look at the roots of it, people who are in trouble because they didn't pay their federal taxes and who defend themselves by saying, well, I don't have to pay them because I'm sovereign and you don't have the authority to tax me. The thing is, that kind of refusal to follow the law is fine if you're willing to pay the consequences. And one of the reasons we admire the founders is that they were willing to pay the consequences. And a lot of them suffered grievously as a result of the War of Independence and lost their property. Some lost their lives. Sovereign citizens and sort of people like that these days often try to have it both ways. They want to say, well, we're sovereign and we're not subject to the tax laws and other federal laws, but you can't do anything to me as a result of that. And it just doesn't work that way. Laws only mean something if they're enforced. And so they end up being arrested and prosecuted and subject to fines, just as the founders risked doing at the founding of the country.
But the founders fought back. So what you're saying is that for these sovereign citizens to really follow through, they have to raise private armies, which some of them are doing. I mean, that's part of the push for gun control, is not just the fear of an unsafe neighborhood because of gangs, but because you actually might have organized militia groups who are accumulating arsenals to do just what you suggest, enforce the law by open revolt.
And the argument that the most ardent gun rights advocates make is that government wants to take away our firearms so that they can oppress us, and that we have a right to keep our firearms because we might want to form a militia. And of course, that's happened, right? People have formed militias, as they call them now. And you know, that's created standoffs like the occupation of federal grazing land in eastern Oregon. We've had episodes like this throughout our nation's history, for that matter. The most famous and worst example in terms of human life being the Civil War.
Right. So I'm just wondering, as a lawyer, what do they teach you about this in law school? Is there something short of winning a war that distinguishes between legitimate declarations, like our Declaration of Independence, which most of us accept, and illegitimate declarations that attempt to draw on the same legal basis?
Well, you know, as lawyers, you know, we are trained to interpret and apply and follow the rule of law. People who declare themselves to be immune from federal laws aren't doing that. And so are people who engage in acts of civil disobedience. And, you know, they are, you know, putting themselves out there. And the, I think the legitimate civil disobedience leaders realize that they may be arrested, as Dr. King was. And yet that is part, can be part of the process of changing laws. So civil disobedience, so long as you're willing to pay the penalty for breaking the law, can be, you know, in its nonviolent forms, a legitimate means of trying to foment change where you think that the pace of change has been too slow. For example, civil rights are our best and most noble example of that. What's more troubling, I think, when it comes to the issue of civil disobedience is, you know, elected officials refusing to enforce the law, that and saying, well, I'm only going to enforce the laws that I agree with. And that can be, you know, the former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder declaring that he would not enforce laws on same-sex marriage, or it can be sheriffs in eastern Washington who refuse to enforce the new state gun law that's designed to promote public safety. It's problematic. But even there's a solution. The solution is political. It's, you know, you change the people running the country. You have elections. And that's the ultimate safeguard of our liberty. And it's why we still have the worst form of government, except for any
except
other,
for all the
as
others.
Churchill said.
That's and right. To me, there's the difference. The colonists couldn't appeal to Parliament or to King George because they weren't listening. Once they got their own government, then, yeah, you could say, look, if you don't like the authority of the state, then run for office and change it. Once you have a democracy and, right. you are running your own country, then the excuse for a Declaration of Independence is removed, it seems to me.
Well, you replace the Declaration of Independence with the United States Constitution.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole basis of the Constitution is not that the government's giving us rights, but rather that we're agreeing to give the government power so long as the government respects our natural rights, those very natural rights that Thomas Jefferson was appealing to.
Former State Attorney General Rob McKenna, our conversation brought to you by Arista Point Employee Benefit Consultants. Thanks, Rob.
Happy 4th, Dave.